Without further ado, I guess we'll go right into our first presentation. It's truly a privilege and an honor for me to be able to introduce our first speaker, Omar Martinez. About 6 years ago, Omar, through divine intervention, came into my life, and he has been my mentee and my student and one of my best friends, and also one of the most impressive young men that I've ever had the opportunity to work with. And I don't know why my name is first on this slide, because this is definitely his piece of our study. Most recently, he was research coordinator on this particular project, which we're going to present two pieces of today. So I'm, again, very grateful to be able to have the opportunity to introduce Omar and share him with you.
Well, I first want to say thank you to Brian Dodge, Dr. Dodge, for the introduction. Like he said, my name is Omar Martinez, and I really apologize. My English is not very good looking, so bear with that. So the title is Sexual Health and Access to Care, Voices from Bisexual Latino Men in the Midwestern United States. This study was funded by the National Institute of Health to Dr. Dodge as the principal investigator. I want to thank the study team, Barbara Vanderpool, Michael Reese, Danny Fonterveris, David Malabranch, the research coordinators of this study, Ryan Nix and Phil Schnars, and also the community advisory committee members, as well as the study participants, which enable us to conduct this study. This is going to be the outline of the presentation today. I'm going to first start with the study aims, then going ahead with the introduction, methodology, findings, conclusion, and potential intervention strategies for this particular group of men. So the first aim of this study is to identify the individual and sociocultural determinants related to sexual health risk among behaviorally bisexual Latino men. I want to clarify that this particular data presented today is just for the 25 self-identified Latino participants out of a total of 75 men. So this data and this analysis is just restricted to the 25 self-identified Latino participants. The second aim is to evaluate the feasibility of engaging a wide, diverse group of behaviorally bisexual men. This is actually the first study ever to be conducted in the Midwestern United States with behaviorally bisexual men, specifically in Indianapolis. So we wanted to find out how to recruit this type of men, this diverse group of men. And the third is to acquire information, relevant information, based on the needs of these men to conduct an intervention that answers these needs of these men. So the introduction, first, there's little information about behaviorally bisexual Latino men, as well as the sexual needs and the health needs of this particular population. There has been an established relationship between migration experience, pre- and post-migration experience, and the effects that this experience have on health behavior, access to health services. So we wanted to better understand this relationship, pre- and post-migration experience, and access to health. Biphobia has been defined as a stigma and discrimination toward bisexual men and women from both heterosexual and homosexual community. And for instance, biphobia in particular has not been studied among behaviorally bisexual men in the Midwestern United States. And this study brings into light these questions about this particular population. The methodology that we use, we pretty much use community-based participatory research approach. Within that, we use community advisory committee meetings, a total of three throughout the 2 years period. One before the intervention was done. Pretty much the community advisor members provided information about the protocol, the questions that should be asked, the strategic venues to recruit these men. The second advisory committee was after data collection, after all these interviews were done, and then advisory committee members provided information and insight into the findings, the preliminary findings. And then the third community advisory committee meeting was after all this data has been analyzed, and they, the members, propose intervention with the researchers, in this case, Dr. Dosh, Dr. Michael Rees, and the study team. Now, one key thing about this study is that community partners discourage us from using gay self-identified venues, for instance, gay bars. They say, forget about it. If you want to reach these men, you have to send broad message. Have you been sexually active in the past 6 months? Are you 18 or older? You may qualify for a study. So what we did with our Latino community partners, we use Latino radio station, we pretty much built trust with this community. There's in Indianapolis, you have West Washington Street, which is a new recent immigrant community. So we pretty much established connection with the stores, with restaurants, and with the largest radio station in town, in Indianapolis. So we aired these ads to recruit these men. Can you imagine? I was on the phone 24/7 answering phone calls. But this is how we were able to recruit a wide, diverse group of behaviorally bisexual men. Again, we use barbershops, restaurants, apartment complex, name it. This is one of the pictures that I want you to highlight here. This is one of the meetings, community advisory committee meetings. The pictures top left, then top right, some of our community members, Dr. Dodge, and then Guadalupe Kelle, bottom left. She's the executive director of Casa Mateo, and as you see here, she's in the radio station, pretty much getting the message out there. Are you sexually active? Have you been sexually active in the past 12 months? Are you 18 or older? You may qualify for the study. And then on the bottom right is some of our community members and myself there. We did the Latino HIV Awareness Day testing of 2007, and I was involved in this campaign as well. So data collection, how this took place. So we did face-to-face in-depth interviews. These interviews lasted approximately 90 minutes, open-ended question, one-on-one. Most of the participants prefer to conduct this interview at Casa Mateo, again, the only community-based organization in Indianapolis serving the HIV/AIDS needs of Latinos. So they pretty much felt a little bit of trust in conducting the interview in this organization. We also provided optional self-administered testing for urine and rectal based STI. Pretty much, we collected sample of urine and rectal samples. They did it by themselves, and we sent it to Bellflower for testing. And we analyzed all this qualitative data using Envivo. This is another picture of Casa Mateo, again, the only community-based organization in town serving the HIV needs of recent immigrant Latinos. We also have another picture of the organization. And then Bellflower, where all the specimens were processed. In terms of the participant characteristics, most of them were Mexican, self-identified as Mexican, 12. But we also have 5 Venezuelan, 1 Brazilian, 1 Cuban, 1 Dominican, Honduran, 1 who identify as mixed, Puerto Rican, Salvadorian, and Hispanic. Nearly all men were born outside the United States, 24 out of the 25. And most of them, 18, have been living in the United States for less than 10 years. So again, this is a recent migration pattern, and probably you guys have been hearing about it all the time in this conference, but this is a recent migration experience, especially to Midwestern states. Most of the men, 20, indicated that they have lived with some, that they are living with someone else, and 5 were living alone when the study was conducted. The majority were single, but 6 of them were married and 2 divorced from their female partners. Just over half of the men reported not having children, 16, but some of them reported having children, 9 of them. More than half of the participants had at least a high school diploma, but a handful of the participants, 8, reported having less than high school. The majority reported that they were currently employed, 24% of the participants. The average monthly income was $1,672. A little bit more about the findings in terms of the self-administered STI testing. 25 all of the participants decided to take this test. And this was one of the highlights of our studies, because we were expecting that because of the fear, I don't want to get tested, we were not going to have a lot of the participants, Latino participants in particular, wanting to get the STI test. But this was not the result. A lot of them so interested, and in fact, there was great quotes in our analysis, but we couldn't put it here because of time constraint, but they were really thankful. After they took the test, this is the first time I have ever been tested. This is the first time I have ever been tested. So these are the experiences that we collected and are key to our study. Two of them tested positive for STIs out of the 23, 8%, and two self-report that they were HIV positive. So two STI and two HIV positive. This paper has been published already at the Journal of Cultural Health and Sexuality, this manuscript, and I'm going to pretty much go over the major themes. But if you want to go in depth into the sub-themes, you can check out the paper. So the major themes were migration experience, family issues in relation to bisexuality, the lack of community, alcohol and substance use during sexual activity, resilient hope, and self-acceptance. Migration experience. Participants really found this as a major issue impacting their life, pre- and post-migration experience. For instance, one of them says, well, there are places you go and they don't serve you because you don't have a social security. One time, I wanted to get a blood exam for HIV, and they didn't want to do it because of the same thing. I didn't have papers. This was a major concern. A major concern reflects among most of the participants in our study. Another one said, if you end up having one of those diseases, HIV, gonorrhea, chlamydia, trichomonas, syphilis, you don't have many resources that will help you out. Again, this lack of trust with the current health agencies that are present. Let me highlight, remember I highlighted before, there was one agency, Casa Mateo, there's still one, that there's still this sense of trust. And therefore, that's probably why 25 of the participants decided to get the STI rectal sample, provide the rectal sample and urine. I want to also touch upon these critical issues. You probably know about the Alabama law, the Georgia, South Carolina. Indiana also passed one of these anti-immigration laws. It's called the Indiana Senate Bill 590, passed the Senate, and pretty much allows police officers to act as immigration officers. You can get a stop and be asked about your documentation status, and if you are not documented, you can get deported. And this is one of the major issues, and this is implemented at the local level as well. So I wanted to touch on this immigration piece that is highlighted and affecting this community. Family issues in relation to bisexuality. Many of the participants in our sample reported experience of rejection and prejudice within the family context. One of the quotes, sometimes I feel alone. I always miss my family, but one always learns how to manage that part. Sometimes, like I told you, being here above all, not having a barrier. Your family is not here. There's no one to judge you. You can let go of your monkey here, but it is up to you and how you want to live your sexuality and what values you have. Again, many of the participants talk about it. Yes, I'm far away from my family. They're not here. But at the same time, this institution becomes an institution of judgment. And in a sense, I kind of want to be far from that. This was the experience of many of our participants. Lack of community. A lot of them talk about the lack of support from the Latino community as well as perceived bisexual spaces or venues that they could seek care. One of the quotes says, being bisexual, we're really depressed because we feel like we don't belong to any group. We don't belong anywhere. Another one of the participants, it's very difficult because the American community is different from the Hispanic community. The Hispanic community has to be more closed because it's very mocking. For example, I have my family, they take it as a mockery. Like, they make fun of you and things like that. There's no respect. This was translated from Spanish. And again, these are the things that these participants are saying, the lack of community, the lack of perceived space for bisexual men or behaviorally bisexual men to go and get care, or a sense of belongingness within this Latino community, West Washington Street in Indianapolis. Alcohol as substance abuse. Almost half of the participants reported that both they and their male sexual partners were using alcohol during the most recent sexual activity, 11 of them, and two were using other drugs. Four reported using alcohol with their female sexual partners during the most recent sexual act, and two were using other drugs. Do you see the disparity there? 11 using alcohol with their male sexual partners, and only four with female partners. So there's one thing there to highlight. One of the quotes says, "When I'm drunk, I feel powerful, like I can do anything. I'm not care to talking to nobody, or I think I can show people really who I am when I'm drunk, like I'm not shy at all. But if I'm not on alcohol, something is missing. Something is missing when I don't drink alcohol." Another one of them said, "I did not think about the risk until I was done with that specific situation. I could have used condoms, but could not do it because I was under the influence of alcohol." Again, the impact of alcohol as a coping mechanism, but also affecting, in some ways, condom use. While I'm here talking about the major issues affecting these recent immigrants in the Midwestern United States, specifically Indianapolis, there was also some participants that talk about resilience, hope, and self-acceptance. And I wanted to finish this data analysis with one of the quotes reflecting that there is hope, that there is self-acceptance. "I don't know how to describe my sexuality. I'm different. I like to experiment. I like sex. I don't have any addiction to sex and stuff like that. I don't feel addicted to sex, but I really like to have sex because I think I feel in connection with the other person. When you have sex with someone, whoever it is, a girl or a man, and where you're having sex with that person because you like the person, I think when you have sex with that person, you feel really, really connected. I feel like I have an internal connection with that while I like that person and I have sex with him or with her." Again, I want to bring these key phrases that he said. Experiment. I like sex. I don't know how to describe my sexuality. I'm different. Being different for this participant was okay. I like sex. I'm different. Some of the, within the questions, we ask about the potential intervention strategies that we could use to better reach this community, to better get the service to this man. A lot of them said using bars, using DJs, using channels that ensure privacy, using broad marketing advertising, radio stations, stores, were very successful using already these venues and these key places in this community to reach this community. And also using already this community-based organization in Indianapolis, Casa Mateo, that have already established this trust. Potential intervention strategies. There seem to be two underlying factors that were most important in terms of providing health services for Latino behaviorally bisexual men: privacy and trust building. These are two major key findings in our study as well. Now, I talk about the community advisory committee meetings and how they were key in our intervention. After the third meeting, they proposed intervention strategies. For instance, educate on the importance of being aware of political immigration rhetoric. As you know, the times are changing. You have Indiana Senate Bill, you have Georgia, you have South Carolina, you have Alabama, and there's a need to better understand these immigration policies and how they're impacting Latinos and the perception of Latinos and access to health. As you know, as you were able to see with the quotes, this is actually impacting. They will ask for my Social Security. This is the perception of one of the Latino, but it was a common sense. I'm scared to go to a health provider because I fear that I will be asked for my documentation status and be deported because you have Indiana Senate Bill 590, because you have Alabama immigration law. And there's a need to further understand this, and health providers need to be aware of the impact of these immigration policies. Also, build on a comprehensive referral system that meets all these needs of these men. For instance, establish partnership with legal service agencies. Build a mental health service component within this intervention. That's another thing that was addressed by the Community Advisory Committee members. Provide guidance in how to cope with family pressure and build the skills on disclosure of bisexuality. Establish inroads with these informal hidden social networks to provide service and channel information. And also talk about self-esteem. Break stereotypes. Build leadership among this community. We talk also about the benefits from the participants getting the STI testing. We talk also about the benefits of the research working with this community. But these agencies also benefit from collaborating with research institutions. For instance, we successfully acquired the Ryan White HIV Service Grant for Casa Mateo. We also successfully acquired the Minority AIDS Council grants. I was involved in health fair and Latino HIV Awareness Day campaigns. We also applied for the Hombres Indianapolis to implement it at Casa Mateo. We also got that grant for $22,000 to a year span to implement an Hombres HIV an HIV intervention for heterosexual men at Casa Mateo. And community partners really were committed to be part of this next step intervention. These are the two manuscripts that have been published so far. Well, one has been published and the other one is in press. And then there's other five manuscripts currently under review based on this study. And thank you so much for being part of this.
So we have about 5 minutes if anyone has questions, or we can also take questions at the end from all of the speakers.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. One, did you keep track of how many men called you and to recruit your 25? And then did you ask the screening, I guess you asked the screening question on the phone immediately about their bisexual behavior?
Go ahead.
Go on.
No. What was the other question?
And then the other question is about why you chose not to test for HIV with the men, and you didn't do the STI test.
I'm going to first answer to those questions, which are very key. We actually kept track. We've had a sheet for every participant that called for a screening, where we asked the age, how old are you, how do you identify yourself, and then we went ahead with the more specific question. Have you had sexual activity in the past 12 months with at least one man? Yes or no. Have you had sexual activity in the past 6 months with at least one woman? Yes or no. There were a lot of participants who did not qualify, and they were saying, you know, maybe in future studies you can be part of another study. So we did keep track of that data, of those participants, of every participant that called and get a screening. In terms of the HIV question, how many participants? Around 500. 500 participants were screening, a lot of them. So I was pretty much busy all the time. In terms of the HIV piece, we decided not to go for HIV testing, but I think that that's a better question for the principal investigator, Dr. Brangler.
Well, we had considered that, but because of the length of the interview and then also the testing procedures on top of that, we were advised, you know, that there just wasn't enough time to do appropriate counseling and testing within that. But everyone did receive referrals to other organizations who could do that. But yeah, I think one other key point about the recruitment was that obviously took a lot more time and effort than just putting out a postcard that says, "Are you bisexual? Call us." But having done both, I think we really ended up with a sample that is made up of the type of people that we were looking for by using this broad approach. And I'll talk more about the broad approach, too, in the last talk this session.
Thank you.
I'm just curious. So for the two participants who self-reported that they were HIV positive, what occurred with them? Did you link them with services? Did it confirm that they were positive?
So luckily, those participants were already connected to services and receiving medication because of the key of Casa Mater. Again, going back, the only agency pretty much providing services to HIV positive Latino. So those patients, those participants were already connected to service through Casa Mater.
Could you talk a little bit about the social network? Were things then sort of contained in the social network? How did they meet with partners? That was one question. Also, what brought them to Indianapolis? Were they in migrant streams, or were they sedentary in that area, or were they moving to transient?
Those are really great questions. Pretty much, as you see, there were five Venezuelans, and a lot of those was through participant referral. So these were a net of people that in some way knew each other, they were married, but were having sex with other men. Another key thing is, you see the cantinas. I mentioned the cantinas, that was used as a recruiter, like we recruited from those places, and many of the guys that visited these places talk about sexual activity with transgender, which is another part of the study that we couldn't cover in this particular topic. But there was a lot of these participants at least reported having an experience with transgender individual or cross-dresser at one point in their lifetime. So in these cantinas, you are able to see sometimes cross-dresser and transgender. So there's actually a sexual activity between this self-identified heterosexual men having sex with transgender and cross-dresser. In terms of the migration piece, I think that one of the things that we have to be aware of is that every time that something changed in Latin America gets affected here. As you know now, Venezuela's Hugo Chavez